CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter, at MattMooreCBS, or if you want to find me once again trying to explain to people that Memphis Grizzlies are actually good at basketball, you can find me at HP Basketball. Joining me is James Herbert. He is the NBA writer for CBS Sports. You can find him at Outside the NBA. James, congratulations. You're a Celtic.
I'm a Celtic, too.
Everyone's a Celtic.
Wow, what a day for the Boston organization.
Big day, big day. Danny Ainge finally pulled the trigger, and the only asset he needed was Brad Stevens. It's a good day. It's a good day for him.
That's a little reductive.
I mean, not from the way it sounded in Gordon Hayward's Player Tribune essay.
You think he goes to the – if the Celtics had the roster they
no,
did 3 years
think if
they, ago.
I think if any other coach is coaching them, he stays in Utah.
Right, but if they had Brad Stevens and the roster that Brad Stevens was coaching 3 years ago, you think he goes there?
I don't know. I don't know what he does.
I'm talking like Jeff Green. I'm talking Gerald Wallace past his prime. All those guys.
Sure.
Like, sure. He joined the number one team in the East. He joined a really good team at a team that
He joined the number one team in the East based on, like, just based on record, right?
The number one seed in the East. Okay. Not the best team in the East. Everybody knows they're not the best team in the East.
Well, today there's a little bit of conversation about that. Like, there's conversation today about whether or not this gets them over the hump. That they're right there.
Closer. They're closer.
Yeah, closer. I said that. I was on Chad Duke's radio show in D.C., and I was like, well, look, it's all degrees, right? Like, they were down by 50 in game two of a series that they lost in five games. I know Celtics fans are tired of me bringing this up, but it's kind of relevant when you, a supposedly really good team, are down 50 points to the team that you're supposed to be competing with. That seems like a bad thing. I'm not an expert. Seems like a bad thing when you're down by 50 in a series in which you lose by in five games. Like, if it had gone seven.
I was there. Can confirm. It was not good.
Yeah.
It was very, very bad.
If they'd lost in seven games, I'd be like, well, they had one horrible game two. But that was not what happened. They basically, the Cavs screwed around in game three. And other than that, they wiped the floor with them. Now, Hayward, the important thing to remember here is I think fans tend to look at it as they have this team and this guy comes in and then that adds X value. And so it's like, if you add all the players up, they're like a 17. And now with Hayward, who's like a 5, they're 22. That's not how it works. And it's good and bad because the dynamics.
Team sport.
The dynamics change, the rotations change, the bench changes. But also, Hayward's going to make everybody on that team better because their biggest problem last year was that they could not effectively guard on the perimeter. That was my thing with them constantly. Their defense took an incredible leap in the last 2 months of the season, mostly because their entire schedule was garbage. They were 18th in defense going into the All-Star break. What's going to happen now is all of the teams that were able to exploit them coming off of screens on the perimeter, because Avery Bradley is not big enough to get over them, and Jay Crowder is not mobile enough to get over him, can no longer do that. Hayward will blow those plays up. That's going to help so much. They can more effectively hide Isaiah Thomas defensively with Gordon Hayward on the court because he's, one, a great help defender, and two, a lockdown perimeter guy in his own right. Also, all of those ATO plays that everyone loves from Brad Stevens, the results were actually kind of like, good, not great, good. But now they're going to be absolutely phenomenal because they got another weapon on the court. You have to guard all of these guys all the time. They can all score and they can all shoot. One of the things I think is most impressive about how Danny Ainge has built this roster, they have so many high IQ guys. So many. Isaiah Thomas is incredibly crafty. Al Horford is one of the smartest players in the NBA on court. They just added Gordon Hayward, another incredibly smart guy. Like, they are smart all the way through, outside of Marcus Smart, ironically. They just have like a bunch of really smart dudes on the roster that are going to help them win. So he's going to make everybody better. I think the Celtics take the number one seed in the Eastern Conference next year as well. I think they probably clear that by about four games. I legitimately think that they're going to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the regular season in win totals by four games. They will lose to the Cavs in five games or four games in the Eastern Conference.
I think Hayward is still a little underrated. I think he just got so much better last year. Like, he is a totally different kind of offensive player than he was a couple of years ago, because his offensive game is just so diversified now. I mean, he can do pretty much everything. He can come off screens and shoot. He can create off the pick and roll. He has, he improved his ball handling, so he's a better isolation player now. He has mid-range shots. He can take threes off the dribble. Like, basically anything you ask him to do on offense, he can do. Plus, he's a great passer, and he has really good footwork, and he has good, like, fakes and stuff, so he can have defenders going the wrong way. I really love his offensive game, and I think there's still room to grow. Like, he's going to try to add a post game. He's going to only get more solid. He's still young. And then on the defensive end, he helped you because of all the things you talked about. Plus, just he's really strong. Like, he can actually guard, like, star wings on the other end of the court. And they needed somebody else that could do that. You could see that in the playoffs. So I think he fits perfectly with what they do. He's going to take a lot of the pressure off of Isaiah. He's just going to do so well in that offense. They still have a couple of things to figure out on that roster, especially in the front court, I think. But obviously their future is incredibly bright. It was before. It really is now.
Kelly Olynyk is gone. They're going to renounce him. So, hey, good job on winning them the second round. By the way, the only reason they made the Eastern Conference Finals was because Kelly Olynyk went off in Game 7 versus the Wizards. But congratulations, you're out of here. So long, Kelly.
He's still immortalized in Boston for that performance, though.
And for breaking Kevin Love's shoulder. He did a lot for them. He gave that team a lot over the years. For a guy, by the way, that was voted by his fellow classmates as going to win Rookie of the Year. Like, the rookie survey, everyone said that Kelly Olynyk was going to win Rookie of the Year. That was funny.
That was because he was, like, really good in Summer League that year. I think that was why that happened.
All right. The next thing is, of course, the Jazz. One, I'm very sorry. I know how much you loved watching that team, and it kind of, it really hit me yesterday how much this sucks for Utah. It just, like, and I've battled with Jazz fans in the past. Like, when they've been bad, I've said they've been bad, and the fans were like, how dare you? They're good. And then later they were like, okay, you're right. They're bad. I feel really bad for this team. I just feel really bad for their team, their organization. I feel bad for their fans. Mm-hmm.
Not their fault. It's not the front office's fault.
No, the popular thing today is, well, if they had offered him the 5-year max in 2014, get out of here. Get out of here. In 2014, we were all with Gordon Hayward, like, good player. I don't know how good. Is he worth a max? Is he worth the absolute most? Do you want to tie up your cap space? Because the media money hadn't come in. We were looking at a $67 million cap, and if you're looking at that kind of cap space, you're like, can you win a team with Gordon Hayward as your best player? Like, we had legitimate questions about that. And even then, they were always going to pay him. They were just like, go get your offer sheet, which is what a lot of teams do. A lot of teams go get your offer sheet. So they went out, and he got an offer sheet from Charlotte, and they matched it. They matched it immediately. Yeah. They said, we love him. We want to keep him. And since then, they've done everything in their power to let Gordon Hayward know that he is valued, respected. They pushed for him for an all-star. There are teams that do not respect what a player does. The Bulls never really gave Jimmy Butler the credit that he deserved. That never happened. The Wolves constantly screwed up with Kevin Love. Constantly. Like, they always underrated him and never gave him the kind of support that he should have gotten. And that played into what his intentions were going to be in free agency. That was not the case with Gordon Hayward. They loved him. They did everything right. They built from the ground up. They drafted well. They did everything the way that it needed to be done. And he leaves. And there is nothing to do. And his agent got them to sign Joe Ingles to a 4-year big money deal. They got screwed in every conceivable way. They don't have room to go. They couldn't top Sacramento's offer for George Hill, because it sounds like in large part they went out and got Ricky Rubio because Hayward wanted to play with Rubio. Hayward screwed them about 9 different ways in this process, but he did write a very nice note on the way out.
I don't think it's fair to say he screwed them. He was a free agent. He had the right to go wherever he wanted. I think there's some middle ground between saying that the Jazz should have given him the full 5 years max and saying that it's their fault that they lost him, because it's obviously not their fault. They have built this young, versatile, balanced, improving team. But at the same time, back then, they pissed off Gordon Hayward when they didn't do that. He was mad that they didn't make him an offer at all, that they made him go and test. Because that was reported a million times back then.
I don't remember this at all.
Since then.
I don't remember that he was mad about it. And do you legitimately believe that he was not worth it then? Or that he was worth it then? Do you legitimately believe that at the time you were like, oh no, I would definitely supermax Gordon Hayward to the furthest degree?
No, that's not what I was saying, but I'm saying they knew they were taking a risk then. They knew that he wanted them to come out and offer him the money and not even bother with that stuff. They wanted like Hayward's camp wanted them to make him the priority, and that's not what happened. They said, like with every – like what – they did exactly what you said, what most teams do in that situation. Gordon Hayward didn't want to be treated like most players. And I'm not saying that that's why he left. That's crazy. Like the Jazz have built a team around him that had room to grow, plus was really good right now, plus was balanced on both ends of the floor, plus was deep, plus was versatile, everything. They set it up perfectly for him to stay. I don't fault them at all. But to say that this can't be part of the conversation, that they could have locked him up for an additional year, no, it, of course it can be a part of the conversation because that would have bypassed the situation entirely. And I think you can look around the league. You can look at the Bucks gave Giannis Antetokounmpo a four-year deal and had him take a discount on the max. And now he's going to go into free agency a year earlier than he could have. And if they don't have the roster built around him that will entice him to stay, that they'll look it back and regret that, just like the Jazz might look back and regret this now. Does that mean it's their fault and we should criticize them and this means that they've screwed up things over and over again? No. But I do think it's okay to look back at that decision.
I disagree. I think it's reductive. I think it's revisionist. I think that we too often do this where a player leaves a place, and all of a sudden, we just have to say that, well, clearly that team screwed up. They did the wrong thing. They did not value their guys, and they didn't make it. OKC did everything right with Kevin Durant. Utah did everything right with Gordon Hayward. Sometimes guys just leave. And I'm not, the thing is, it doesn't have to be that anything wrong happened here. Nothing wrong happened here. Like, the free agents were free agents, and they left. Gordon Hayward values playing for his old college coach more than he does anything else, and that's why he made this decision. And that's fine. He gets to go do that. Boston's a great city. He was impressed with the history of the sports, he said, with, like, you know, the, obviously with the Patriots and the Red Sox. Like, they've won, that city's won a ton of championships. He will be very popular with the fans there for various reasons.
We can agree that the story should not be about the Jazz messed up and let him leave. That's crazy. Like, we've been praising this team for the last few years. All I'm saying is the reality is that they could have had him locked up an additional year. That is a fact, and you can't change that.
Gordon Hayward upset with Jazz. I'm looking at a Google report, at Google News. Nope, not seeing anything about it. Jay Crowder, being mad, is on this list. I feel bad for Jay Crowder, too. That dude, like, made the most of his opportunity and turned himself into an asset that Danny Ainge wouldn't trade, and said last year he was upset when the fans were chanting for Hayward, and then they went out and got the upgrade, and now he's either got to play four or he's going to get traded.
I think he's probably going to get traded.
Probably going to get traded.
But let's talk about the Jazz, though. I wrote about them yesterday when this went down. I don't think they're totally screwed. I think this is still a really balanced roster. I think they have enough young guys with potential that now will have, like, sort of more room to grow into bigger roles, that this could still be a pretty good team for a while. The problem is, like, replacing a franchise-level guy like Gordon Hayward, like, that's just impossible. So they're going to take a step back. They're not, like, a guaranteed, you know, 3, 4, 5 seed anymore. You're probably talking about 6, 7, 8, and it's, if they get hurt like they always seem to, then there's a chance they slip out of the playoffs too, because a lot of those teams in the West are just so good. But I do think it's not like, oh, I'm not going to watch the Jazz anymore. They're just going to be garbage. Like, no, I think because they were so deep and versatile in the first place, because they did not just let George Hill walk and have nothing replacing him, because they went and got Rubio, because they did pay up for Joe Ingles and I think got him on a fair contract. Like, I think they're still going to be pretty good. And now it's like, all right, so how good is Rodney Hood? Like, how much can you get out of that guy? Will Alec Burks ever, like, play and be healthy for a full season? And, like, is he still going to be good? What happens with Exum? I really am high on Donovan Mitchell. So, like, I'm still really interested in this team. It's just the ceiling that was there, it's just not as high as it was before.
Yeah, I'm not so high. You know, I think Gobert is really good. He needs spacing and guys that can get him in the right position. Maybe he and Ricky Rubio, will be phenomenal together, and it'll be a perfect set, and everything will be awesome, and Rubio will be the type of player that he's often talked about and rarely has the impact of. Maybe that'll happen in Utah. Hood is interesting because he had really good signs 2 years ago and looked like he was going to be a legit star. Like, it looked like it was going to be, like, the future was going to be Gobert and Hayward and Hood. And then Hood slid last year badly. And so you wonder if that was
injury. He also played hurt a lot.
Yeah, you wonder if that was injury. You wonder if there are problems with him and if Quinn Snyder is frustrated with his developments, where that's going. But he just wasn't the same dude last year, and he's got to make a leap. Like, he has to make a leap in order for them to remain competitive. The problem in the West is really, like, they could be fine, but fine is still going to get you 10th, because that's how good the West is. Like, there's just too many good teams.
Everybody's good now in the West. It's crazy.
It'll be interesting to see if Gobert can go to another level. Like, can he create his own offense consistently? Can they find ways to maximize him without Hayward? All of these things I think are kind of interesting. Exum, at this point, I'm kind of out on. I'm just like, until he shows that he's actually valuable, I think we got to say Exum's just a non-entity. And then Burks is fine. Like, he's just like a standard, not bad defender, okay shooter, standard wing. Like, he's basically like Aaron Aflalo, I think, at this point.
At this point, if he was on the floor enough to be an Aaron Aflalo, that'd be good.
Right. And then, Boris Diaw and James and Joe Johnson. Joe's going to slide a little bit more than he did last year. Like, it's just what's going to happen is, like, they're both going to slide a little bit more. Diaw, I'm worried about, because when Diaw's not a member of really serious teams, that's a guy that tends to take some years off. And he had, I thought, a pretty rough first season with them and then kind of turned it around. He's kind of bounced back towards the end of it, so it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens with Diaw, but Boris is up there too, and that's part of the issue.
Diaw also might not be on the team. Like, his contract doesn't guarantee you for another 10 days. That's a $7.5 million contract that they could trade somewhere. Like, there's flexibility
that
the Jazz have to do something in the next little while, and that could be a part of it. Yeah. I still thought he fit really well in that system last year.
He did. So, I mean, we'll see kind of what happens. I tend to think that they're probably on the outside looking in right now of the playoffs, but I think that they could. I could see them getting there. Like, I could see them as a 6th seed even.
My thing is, they might still be the best defensive team in the league. Like, I know they lost a good defender in Hayward, but, like, you're starting Ricky Rubio, Rodney Hood, Joe Ingles, Derek Favors, and Rudy Gobert. Like, that is still an awesome defensive lineup. So if they're that good defensively, like, what's the offense going to look like? I don't know, but it doesn't have to be top 10 for them to be a playoff team.
Maybe. This might be one where closer to the season I buy in, because, like, Houston in the offseason, I was like, oh, they're going to be, like, right there at the 8th seed again. And then the season got closer, I started to realize, like, oh, this could be really good. And then, like, I jumped on just, like, a minute too late, I jumped onto the Rockets bandwagon. So I might be closer on Utah down the line. They could be pretty good. I'm not convinced. Like, I don't think that they're going to be terrible by any means. Which is,
I'm really high on their coaching staff. I'm really high on their system.
It's just, like, the worst part.
I'm high on Gobert.
The worst part is, man, like, they're back in purgatory. They're right back in purgatory, like, hanging on. And, like, how do you get better?
Well, here's the thing. I think it's different when you're I think you're in purgatory when you're pretty good and maxed out. Like, they're pretty good and all of their best players are 25 and under. So I think it's different.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I just think some skepticism is warranted from that perspective. I think it's skeptical to say when you lose George Hill and Gordon Hayward, I will say this too. I've seen this with teams, like, even if they have good rosters, like, there's an emotional lag when a big free agent leaves. Like, there is just kind of like an emotional lag, I think, on the team. Would you agree?
And it's going to be different. Yeah, I mean, they don't have a go-to guy anymore.
Yeah.
That's the big problem, is at the end of possessions, at the end of games. I mean, sometimes they went to Joe Johnson. They can still do that, I guess. But in general, Hayward had established himself after years of work and improvement as that guy. Like, he earned that role. And now it's like, do they push Rodney Hood into that role? Do they just kind of see what happens and try to do it a sort of egalitarian way, the way the Hawks did, which, by the way, Quinn Snyder was on that staff. We'll see. But I do think there's enough balance there. There's enough depth there. And I also want to see what the front office pulls off for the next week or two before, like, really forming an opinion, but I don't think that this happens and then you immediately write them off, which, like, in some cases you lose a superstar, that's what happens. Like, the Bulls lose Jimmy Butler, the Pacers lose Paul George, and we're like, all right, those teams are irrelevant. Who cares? Like, that is not how I see the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, and Gobert was really high in a lot of areas that you wouldn't expect him to be, even, like, offensively last season. So,
yes,
you know, there's reason to kind of keep hope. I still kind of think that at best they're just going to be like a, yeah, you know, the Jazz team versus like, oh, hey, the Jazz. They're now like, yeah, you know, the Jazz.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
All right, so Danilo Gallinari goes to the Los Angeles Clippers in a three-way sign-in trade in which everyone thought that Paul Millsap was going to be part of it, and he was not. That was in part, I am of the understanding that part of that was, in order to make that deal work, Millsap's last year would have to be non-guaranteed instead of a team option, and for whatever reason, the Nuggets really wanted it for a team option. I'm not sure the cap dynamics on that, but that was my understanding of it. The Hawks get Jamal Crawford, who they are going to play chicken with over a buyout and eventually buy out. That's how this works. Diamond Stone and a first rounder that they got from Houston in the Chris Paul trade. And the Denver Nuggets get a second rounder from the Clippers, and the Clippers get Danilo Gallinari. I wrote today on Danilo Gallinari and what he brings to the table for the Clippers. It's going to be really interesting. One thing I'm just going to want to let everybody know, if you hate free throws, you need to never watch the Clippers next season at all. Under no circumstances should you watch Los Angeles Clippers next season. So you think that Chris Paul and James Harden draw a lot of free throws, right? Because they're always flopping and whining and yada yada. Well, Harden was 15th in percentage of free throws, like percentage of possessions that resulted in free throws per Synergy Sports, minimum 1,000 possessions played. So of everybody that had 1,000 basically touches of the ball that resulted in anything meaningful. He was
15th. It seems low for him.
He was 15th, which everyone's going to be very surprised at because they feel like he's number one by miles. Number one, by the way, Jimmy Butler, surprisingly enough. Chris Paul was 41st in that category. Only 11% of his possessions ended in free throws. Danilo Gallinari, on the other hand, was second to go with Blake Griffin, who was fifth. 19% of all of Gallo's possessions last season resulted in free throws. That team is going to the line a lot. Gallo is better. I've covered Gallo in Denver for four seasons. Gallo is better when the team is better. You will notice that when the Nuggets go on a winning streak, his play improves, and when the Nuggets start to slide, he checks out. So as long as the Clippers are decent and competitive, Gallo's going to play hard, and they're going to play well. Injury is a big factor. The ACL was not just an ACL. That's one thing. You could have fixed that. Gallo was talked into taking an experimental procedure in Aspen by a doctor. It was something that there was a lot of confusion over whose idea it exactly was. And everyone now says, well, I told him not to do that. Somebody told him to, because he went for it. It's the same one that Lindsey Vonn had, which she wound up suing over. The procedure basically is like a complete failure. Like, it's a complete disaster for everyone that's had it. It took Gallo another surgery to get back, and by that time, he'd been away from the court so long, it took him a long time. He's not the same dude. His closeouts are slower. He has less explosiveness. However, Danilo Gallinari is one of the most gifted forwards you're going to find in this league. He is great size and length. He's able to get to the rim with ease. He draws contact incredibly well. He's a great three-point shooter. He was in the 97th percentile overall offensively last year. Like, his offensive profile is terrific. And this is for a guy, by the way, who tends to break the offense and had to basically be talked into using Nikola Jokic. Like, he really resisted... He resisted Nikola Jokic for a long time, and then finally, by the back half of the season, realized what everyone else on the team realized, which is, oh, if I give the ball to Nikola, there's like a 90% chance I'm going to get an open look. Like, it took him a while, but and when he figured it out, he and Jokic were incredible together. Now, Blake's not the same kind of passer. He's good, but he's just not Jokic. He's phenomenal. He's just not Jokic.
I mean, no one's Jokic, right. But like... Blake is up there. Like, right. Blake, especially in the role he's going to play next season, he will be throwing a ton of passes.
Which will be interesting to see. Like, you know, how is the spacing going to be impacted? Because that's part of it is, like, with Crawford and Paul gone and Redick, they don't have a lot of spacing. Patrick Beverley is a good shooter, but he's not somebody you're scared of from that position. Like, the spacing threat isn't there. And they don't have...
Lou Williams is a threat.
Yeah, if Lou Williams doesn't get traded or whatever, then he's like a threat-ish. Oh, God, they have Lou Williams, too. Man, they are going to shoot so many free throws. I think offensively they'll be okay. Gallo, defensively, he tends to lag a little bit off ball, but he's good on ball. And I think his effort will improve on a team that's kind of competing. I kind of still expect the Clippers to be in conversations for the playoffs. I think that they're going to be somewhere between 5 and 8.
Yeah, I think so too.
To me, really, it's going to come down to, and this is kind of a sidebar, I think the Western Conference playoff picture is probably going to come down to Jusuf Nurkić. I legit
think it's going to also come down to, like, which team is healthy. Like, a lot of this stuff, like, if you're talking about, like, similar teams in terms of skill and, like, talent and statistical projections and stuff, it's just, like, it's going to come down to luck.
Right. So, to that end, I think the Gallo thing is really good. So I think Gallo helps them. Like, it's not, they lost Paul and Redick. They're going to be a worse team. But I think Beverly and Gallo, that's a pretty good team. And I'm really intrigued by the idea of Gallo at 4 as a playmaking point forward with Griffin. But I don't know if it's going to work.
Me too.
I don't know if it's going to work or not.
My one, like, hesitation about this, because I think Gallo's underrated. I think he's an awesome offensive player. And he has some versatility there on defense. And like you said, pretty good one-on-one defender. My issue is that since those two surgeries, to me, he's pretty much been a power forward. That's where he's best, just as a stretch four. And they're signing him to essentially be a small forward. Like, he's definitely going to start at 3. And then I don't know how many minutes they're going to play Blake at the 5 and Gallo at the 4. Like, Doc has been kind of hesitant to do that in the past. He's been hesitant to stagger minutes in the past. And if Blake is supposed to be a point forward and Gallo kind of wants to be a point forward, like, that's an issue. Like, that's something you have to sort out with your rotations. So I'm interested to see how that kind of plays out. I think he'll be fine as a 3. I just think he could be really, really good as a 4. And that's what makes me, even though, like, you obviously have to celebrate this move because the Clippers have been looking for a small forward for years and years and years, the one thing you have to take into account is that the guy they finally got to play the 3, while he's very good, is probably better as a 4.
I don't know if he's better. I mean, I think he's best actually with the ball in his hands. I don't like him as, like, a spot-up only threat. I think that limits him too much. So
I'm thinking more defensively.
I don't know, but yeah, it's tough. I've just seen, here's the problem with him at 4, and I say this having watched him a lot. If you play him against stretch fours, he falls asleep. Like, yeah. He can contain, but he falls asleep. The other thing, and this is driving me nuts about him, and I've, like, complained about it to every single Nuggets person, is when he closes out, he stops short. So he'll run you off, but he always stops as if he's ready for you to drive, even when it's clearly a guy that's going to launch. Like, unbelievably clear. Like, this guy is only, like, Ryan Anderson he does that with. Where it's like they would play Houston, and he would, like, aha, I've got you now, no driving for you. And Ryan Anderson's like, I'm already halfway through my shot motion.
Like, no, and Ryan Anderson's like, you're right, no driving for me, please, I don't want to drive.
No driving for me, just stay back. Okay, so what else went on yesterday? Oh, okay, so Sam Presti continues to just beat everyone this offseason.
Oh, my God.
Just killing
it. Beyond, like, I was actually more stunned by this than the Paul George trade. That is not hyperbole. When I saw that number, I could not believe it. Patrick Patterson took less money than he took last time in a pre-TV money world.
He wants to win, man. Like,
he
wants to win, I think.
It's a great situation for him. He can get out of the deal in 2 years while he's still kind of in his prime and finally sign the big deal. And I just don't think the big deal was out there this time. I think the market just dried up really quickly. And that's the reality. So we just went for the best situation possible. And it's a freaking awesome situation. I just can't believe Presti pulled this off. It's robbery. He's really good.
Part of what I think we're seeing is, you know, there are teams that have money, but there are not – to the players' credit, there are very few guys that are just taking paydays. Like, very few dudes are just like, George Hill and Zach Randolph were like, nope, it is payday time. Going for the payday. It is time to get mine. Which is really surprising for George Hill. Not at all surprising for Z-Bo, and we'll get to that in a second. But I look at a lot of these other moves, and it's just clear the guys are like, no, I want to be in a good situation. Like, I'm going to get paid millions no matter what. I just want to be in a good situation. And so they're able to be in a pretty good spot despite kind of the, how this has worked out. And I think that, you know, Patterson is going to make them better in a whole host of areas. What do you think about Hill and Zebo to Sacramento?
I mean, I get it. I wasn't a huge fan of the tandem, but look, you can get Hill at that money. Like, you're a team that needs some professionals in the locker room. He's a really good player. He will make Fox better. He will make Hield better. He can play next to both of them. It's not what I wanted for George Hill personally. As a big fan of George Hill, I wanted to see him in a better situation basketball-wise. I wasn't like, oh my god, yay, he's with the Kings. But I get why the Kings did it. And it's like, at a certain point, when you have an opportunity like that, you take it. With Zebo, I'm a bit more dubious just because I think he is pretty bad defensively at this point, and offensively, like, you need shooters around him. You need proper spacing. Sacramento kinda has that, but not really. So I get it. They went and got some vets and they're professionals, and it'll be like everybody in Sacramento will be happy to have Zach Randolph and George Hill around. It's just, I'm not sure where this really takes them. They're still going to be bad next year.
Zebo took pay cuts at the Grizzlies to keep that core together. It was time for him to get his. He had lost a starting spot. He had lost his rotation minutes. It was time. Like, I don't blame him at all. This was kind of, the writing was on the wall about this for a long time, and everyone kind of hoped that they might be able to find some sort of way to make it work, but it just makes sense, and I don't blame that guy. One thing I will say is, like, all that money that he's making, a lot of that's going to go towards, like, getting poor people lunches, because Zebo's community efforts are just incredible. That dude has bought power in the winter for thousands of people in Memphis year after year after year. And the minute that he retires, Memphis better be on the phone talking about when he wants to have his jersey retired. That dude is a legend in
Absolutely.
Memphis. That era was incredibly fun. If the Grizzlies do not re-sign Jamichael Green, they're playing hardball. If they do not re-sign him, I have them as like the fifth best team in the West right now, because everyone's freaking out because of that opinion and saying that I'm some sort of homer. And I'm like, one, most of my fandom's dead at this point. Two, Memphis was basically, if the Memphis had beaten teams like Brooklyn, which they clearly are better than, and like Philadelphia, they lost games to bad squads last year. And if they just correct that next year, and even if they lose a few more to the good teams, like if the Warriors thump them like they should, they're still going to come out and be 4 to 5 games better. Memphis underperformed in win total this year. It's why they look so good versus San Antonio. They're a much better team than what their regular season win-loss profile reflected. But if they don't re-sign Jamichael Green, I might have them out of the playoffs. That's how big of a deal he is to them. They are in trouble if they do not re-sign Jamichael Green. What else we got?
Yeah, I'm confused about why that is, like, dragged on.
I've heard a lot about they are really playing hardball. I mean, they think they can get him in this market. Part of it is the GMs have picked up on that. The people I've talked to are like, yeah, the front offices think now the market is truncated, the money's dried up, we can put the squeeze on and get these guys for really good deals. Because last summer, I just think embarrassed and freaked out everyone. Like, it just, like, everyone looks at last summer, and because that was like, I talked to a few people last year that didn't do anything, and they were like, we weren't going to do anything in this market. Are you insane? Like, Portland gave Evan Turner $18 million. We're not doing anything. Like, if that's the market, yeah, we're not going out there. I cannot stress how bad Portland looks right now, like, for those decisions.
Oh, my God. I know. I mean, they got Nurkic, so that salvaged a lot, but
Crab and Turner. That's just a lot. That's just a lot of money.
Even, like, and I liked the Harkless deal at the time, but, like, even that, you look at what, like, Patrick Patterson got now and what some other guys are going to end up taking, and you're like, that's still fine. But we were like, oh, that was a great deal by Portland. But it's like, that was a great deal in comparison to what they paid for Allen Crabbe. You know? Like, the market for, like, a pretty good player is completely different than what it was last summer. It's just, it's crazy.
So all of this is meaningless because not only do we know that nothing anyone could do could make them better than the Warriors, the Warriors got better. They got Omri Caspi and Nick Young, who in any other situation I would laugh at them acquiring, and yet I am confident that Nick Young will be a meaningful and serious contributor to the best team in the league next season. They are unstoppable. They are light years ahead. It is incredible. Props to Bob Myers, who continues to impress me with everything that he does and every decision and word that comes out of his mouth. Like, Bob Myers is amazing. Like, he really, like, if you ever hear Bob Myers talk, it's very impressive. Just the intellect that he has, and for him, and the humility. He's like one of the only, him and Steve Kerr, I like to think of as the only two people on that entire team that have any sense of humility.
I don't think that's true.
Who else?
I mean, I think a lot of guys in that organization have humility. I think that's part of why they're so
good. Nick Young's probably going to be great there. And Myers was aggressive. He just didn't sit back and go, like, yeah, we'll just re-sign our guys and run it back. They're going to lose Ian Clark, and that's kind of a bummer. I thought they would keep Clark. I thought they were grooming Clark to take over as the backup point guard for Livingston, because that's how the playoff rotation shook out. But instead, they keep Livingston and Iguodala, and it looks like Ian Clark's going to be on his way out. And meanwhile, they got Nick Young and Omri Caspi. Caspi's going to be fantastic. Young's going to be good. Like, they, guess what? The Warriors are better than they were last year.
You ever watch the Warriors and think what they need is more spacing?
Yeah, they need more shooting. They need more shooters that can also defend at a high level. That's what they're really missing. You know, that's
like the Caspi thing. Like, he had a weird year last year. Like, he started off in the doghouse in Sacramento for God knows what reason. Then he wound up in New Orleans and then Minnesota. But like, if you haven't like watched a lot of like him in the past like 3 years, like he went from a guy who, when he came into the league, like, was like a fine 3-point shooter to a guy that's like confidently taking like 26, 12, 27 foot 3-pointers. Like, he gets to play in this system.
Yeah.
And he still hustles like crazy on defense and can defend multiple positions. Like, he will basically replace Matt Barnes and like be way better. Like, it's just, it's an amazing signing at the value that they got him. And then Nick Young, I mean, we talked about this a little bit last time, but I really think his year under Luke Walton did wonders for him, and his job will never be easier. Like, he's just going to step in and he's going to launch a ton of threes, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to watch as they beat every single team by 40. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more reaction from the Hayward signing, with more stuff coming out. I think Deion Waiters is probably going to get signed in the next 48 hours. Still some moves to come. Some interesting guys, especially restricted free agents, still on there. I've got a column up on the top 5 best available free agents right now if you want to know who your team can still go get. I'm working on something on how Hayward's going to fit with the Celtics. I've got complete analysis on Gallinari. James has got great stuff like about where Utah goes from here, as well as some other stuff. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference later this week. God help them. Lots of stuff coming on CBS Sports. James, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Matt.